You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Equifax attracts more attention from plaintiffs, AGs, and Congress. Everyone else is on heightened alert for fraud and identity theft. MongoDB says users of its database process were not assigning passwords to administrative accounts. A Bluetooth-based attack vector, Blueborn, is described. Syringe pumps are found to be hackable. Bots serve more effective social media clickbait than human operators can. And Roman Seleznev gets 27 years after he cops a plea to hacking. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, September 12, 2017. Early and ambiguous comments about the Equifax breach pointed to an Apache Struts vulnerability, with the suggestion that the vulnerability the attackers exploited was CVE-2017-9805, a bug Apache fixed on September 5, 2017. But according to Contrast Security and other observers from the security industry, it now seems likelier that the hackers exploited CVE-2017-5638, a vulnerability that was patched in March of this year. The Equifax breach continues to draw litigation from the plaintiff's bar and regulatory inquests from state and federal government bodies. Congress plans to hold hearings. The company's share price dropped another 8% yesterday. In a kind of sector-wide collateral damage, Equifax's competitors TransUnion and Experian also took smaller hits to their stock late last week, but both now seem to be recovering. The Equifax breach is providing some tailwinds for another sector. Unsurprisingly, that sector is cybersecurity. Exchange-traded funds covering cyber have risen steadily since the breach was disclosed last Thursday. The persons unknown who demanded ransom from Equifax with a September 15th deadline now appear to be grifters unconnected with the hack. There's been no further public word on attribution. Turning to another incident, databases held for ransom, MongoDB believes the recent wave of ransom attacks on users of its database products have a common cause: failure to set passwords for administrative accounts. The vendor says it hopes to improve its customers' security awareness. Armis Labs has announced its discovery of a Bluetooth-based attack vector affecting major operating systems. They call it Blueborn. It's said to affect equally desktop, mobile, and IoT systems. In news of medical device vulnerabilities, ISC CERT has warned that Medfusion syringe pumps could be vulnerable to remote manipulation. Mitigations are available. ZeroFox research suggests that bots may be better than humans at getting their marks to swallow social media clickbait. In an experiment, the bots consistently achieved higher conversion rates than the human social engineers they were compared against. Their experiment has attracted renewed interest as experts mull the increased weaponization of artificial intelligence by various bad actors. In addition to the CyberWire podcast, I am also the host of the Recorded Future podcast, where I have the pleasure of speaking with smart, interesting people on topics centered around threat intelligence. Mike Cole is one of those interesting people. He's an intelligence analyst, a reality TV personality, and an award-winning author of fantasy fiction. Here's a segment from our recent conversation. You are an award-winning and best-selling author, and in order to write compelling characters, you have to be able to put yourselves in the mindset of the characters that you're writing. And I wonder how that informs your abilities as an analyst, to be able to put yourself in the mindset of your adversaries.
I'm really glad you asked that question, because it's something I think that it's an issue actually I kind of campaign on, especially in law enforcement and intelligence and the military, and it applies to cyber. Look, cyber is an incredibly analytical field, right? We are attempting to interpret and understand machines and think like machines all the time. And that necessarily takes you out of a human mindset. And then you marry that to the law enforcement and intelligence field. You know what we call the people, our adversaries, in every police department and in almost every intelligence agency? We call them bad guys. And that's an incredibly judgmental position to take. It's necessary because you can't be worrying about your adversary's relationship with their mother if you're going to, you know, have to do the hard work of prosecuting them, or if you're in kinetic law enforcement, you know, literally putting cuffs on them and dragging them off. So I'm not saying that that kind of snap judgment isn't necessary, but it is a roadblock and it does hold you back, because behind those computers are people, and people have human motivations. Let me give you a corollary in fantasy fiction. One that maybe a lot of your listeners will be familiar with is George R. R. Martin's famous series, A Song of Ice and Fire, which has been reinterpreted by HBO into the hit television show Game of Thrones, which I'm sure pretty much everybody listening to this podcast has seen. If they haven't, they're living under a rock, I guess. So George R. R. Martin is famous for evoking – George R. R. Martin, if you meet him, he's a, you know, older, overweight white guy, grew up in Bayonne, New Jersey. I think we can all safely say that he's not a dwarf like Tyrion Lannister, and that he's not a haughty, you know, noble queen like Cersei Lannister, right? And yet he evokes these characters so convincingly that they resonate so realistically with an audience. Like, it's amazing. It's like he knows them. And when people try to dissect how is it that he's able to do that so well as a writer, and my answer is he's empathetic, is that he's able to step outside his own preconceived notions and judgments of the world and into the shoes of someone who's utterly unlike them in a sympathetic manner. And that enables him to understand their goals. Now, think about that. Obviously, that has utility in fiction because it enables us to make realistic characters. But it also has utility in law enforcement and intelligence, because when you can step into the mindset of an adversary and understand their goals intimately, you'll be able to move one step ahead of them. If you understand that the motivation of a hacker is to do something for the lulz, or to do something because they're ideologically sympathetic to ISIS, but not the same as ISIS, well, I mean, that's a very, very different set of actions. This is one of the things that always frustrated the heck out of me when I was working CT. I can't remember the name of the head of FBI CT who famously said to Congress that he looked for leadership skills, whatever that means, in his counterterrorism agents, because a bombing was a bombing, a murder was a murder. He didn't think anybody needed to know Arabic or anything about Islam. And I want to choke the guy because that's exactly the opposite of what's correct, right? Is that the bad guys that we're judging, they have motivations, and those motivations can serve as predictors for their actions. And if you marry a real knowledge of the technology that they're using and an understanding of what's making him tick, and an empathetic and a sympathetic, a sympathetic understanding of what makes them tick. I'm not saying you should betray your organization and assist a bad guy. What I'm saying is you should be able to understand what makes them tick, because it will help you stay one step ahead of them. And one of the watchwords in fiction, one of the aphorisms you'll always hear us saying, is that everyone is the hero of their own story.
That's Mike Cole. You can hear the rest of my interview with him on the Recorded Future podcast at recordedfuture.com/podcast. And finally, Roman Seleznev has been sentenced after copping a guilty plea to U.S. federal charges of wire fraud, aggravated identity theft, and causing intentional damage to the protected computer. He'll get 27 years in Club Fed, and he's also been ordered to pay $170 million in restitution. This is believed to be the stiffest sentence a U.S. judge has handed down for a cybercrime. Mr. Seleznev admitted to being part of a carding ring and also to serving as a cashier, the guy who hoodwinked pay card transaction processors into disgorging a cool $9.4 million from what must have been a large number of ATMs. Mr. Seleznev was nabbed in Maldives as he was headed for the airport about to return from a vacation with his girlfriend. The U.S. Secret Service agents who made the collar delivered him to the continental U.S., stopping only for a quick appearance before a U.S. magistrate in the territory of Guam. The case has had an unusually high profile. Not only is it international, but Mr. Seleznev, a Russian citizen, is the son of Valery Seleznev, a big numero in the Russian Duma, Moscow's parliament. The Justice Department is pleased with its win. The Russians are not. They particularly object to the manner of Seleznev's apprehension. The Russian embassy in Washington had this to say on the matter. "We continue to believe that the arrest of Russian citizen Roman Seleznev, who de facto was kidnapped on the territory of a third country, is unlawful. According to available information, Roman Seleznev's lawyer is planning to appeal against sentence." Another lesson to be learned here. If you're wanted by the law, don't vacation in places that have serviceable relations and extradition agreements with the particular long arm you're on the lam from.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Robert M. Lee. He's the CEO at Dragos. Robert, talking about industrial control systems, as we always do, and I was curious about this notion of deterrence. When we have stories like our suspicions that it's the Russians who've been rattling around inside Ukraine's power grid system, how much of this is actually wanting to break stuff, and how much of this is folks like the Russians sort of showing the rest of the world, hey, this is what we're capable of. Take notice of this.
Yeah, great question. So when we look at these type of events, there's, from an international relations perspective, a lot of times there's multiple reasons to do things, right? There's no guaranteed they're only trying to show off or guaranteed they're only trying to do disruption. And understanding exactly what an adversary's intent is one of the most difficult things in intelligence. That being said, we obviously can see that an adversary and all suspicions point very, very keenly to Russia and Russian-based groups are just absolutely going and disrupting a large portion of Ukraine, not only from the power grid, but other sites. And a byproduct of that, whether they intended it or not, is absolutely a level of showing that they can do this and are willing to do this. And sometimes that second part, the willingness, is maybe even more important than the can. Can the United States take down infrastructure? Sure. But if we are never willing to do so, it may not actually pose a threat to other nations. And for that back and forth, it's very important to understand that it's got to be met with some sort of response. So if Russia is responsible, and really it doesn't even matter about attribution at this point, regardless of who is responsible, the fact that we have seen indiscriminate malware like WannaCry and the NotPetya case where it impacted Ukraine, as well as an attack that took down a portion of the power grid for the first time in history through a cyber attack, both in 2015 and 2016, and that those things have been met with a silence. Absolutely no senior level government officials, like White House level officials, have come out and condemned these attacks across two different administrations. And that is concerning because it sets not only sort of a standard and emboldens the attacker to think that they can get away with this, but also erodes at any sort of norm setting that we might have hoped to had in this space. So it's not only an aspect of potential deterrence, which I would agree in, and I think it's a very keen point, but it is also an aspect of writing the rules of the road to future to come of what is and isn't permissible. And quite frankly, we really need to take a stand at indiscriminate attacks and attacks on civilian infrastructure because there's just too much harm to the global community in doing those.
Robert M. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.